John Bassler. This is the new John Bassler Show, CBS Audio Network. Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's based in London. He writes the political economics column. However, Joe and I look for stories that are a little stranger than usual when we look for Europe, because talking about the European Union all the time doesn't lead to revelation. Talking about Russia, however, leads to revelation. And we're going to start talking about Russia. It's not a member of the European Union, but it's integrated into Europe's success or failure because of it is an energy superpower. And also, now and again, we read in the news, the Kremlin sends the secret agents into the European Union to murder people or blow up factories. Joe, is this the entertaining story for the evening news in London, that not only did two Russian agents attempt to murder two British citizens with Novichok in 2018, mysterious poisonings that point the finger right at the FSB, but the same two guys blew up a Czech munitions factory. Joe, this is economy of agents. Vladimir Putin is a tightwad. He uses the same guys to kill that he does to blow things up.
This is one of those little stories that is popping up in a few places, even with everything that's going on in the world. And what's interesting about it is that it just shows that Vladimir Putin's plan seems to be to try to make as much mischief as possible everywhere that he can. In the case of the UK and the Salisbury Novichok poisoning that these guys were allegedly involved in, the plan there was to try to tamp down on dissent against Putin or critics of his regime anywhere in the world, to stretch his arm and warn others that he could get to them. There seems to have been something else going on potentially in the Czech Republic, and I think that it just shows that even when it isn't a situation like Ukraine, where there are troops involved in various ways, and there is an obvious sort of threat from Russia staring you straight in the face, that all around the world you can have this attempt to make. I mean, mischief is almost not a serious enough word to describe what's going on here. And I think that people need to be aware that this is very serious.
I think it's time for a sitcom tragedy here, because they blow up a factory in Czechoslovakia in the Czech Republic that's said to be providing arms to Ukraine in 2014. They then attempt to kill two British citizens who are said to be in some way antithetical to Vladimir Putin's vision of the world, though they're living in Britain, in Salisbury. Now, Joe, I'd want to know whether those are the same two guys that poisoned Navalny's underwear when he flew off from Siberia and had to be rescued in Germany. I think that there's legitimate reason to pursue these two members of the Russian Secret Service, because we're looking at Vladimir Putin being, you'd have to say, he almost acts like a crime boss out of a thriller. He doesn't act like the leader of a great country. He's vouchsafing. These aren't petty crimes, because they're attempting to kill people. But what are they, Joe? Should we describe them as trite in some fashion? Oh, go poison him to death. He spoke against me.
Well, I mean, I think that, there is kind of an element to that, but I think that there is also, a very serious thing here that people tend to lose sight of, because I think that, too often the way people have thought about this kind of conflict is still through the lens of the Cold War, where you had two very large nation states and sort of, there was often a lot of skullduggery that would go on beneath the surface. But really the big theater was things like the nuclear arsenals and the threat of war in Europe, or massing armies and that sort of thing. Whereas now, one thing that Putin seems to have learned is that the way that he can project power, if he doesn't have the resources for the big military shows of action, and he does not have those resources now, is that he can do these other things. He can suppress dissent, or he can try by harassing some dissenters anywhere in the world and showing that he has the potential to get to them. Or he can undertake all of these other actions. And that can be a real challenge for the rest of the world to figure out how to respond to that, because if you're conditioned to look for the big thing, you need to understand that actually sometimes the somewhat smaller seeming things actually are the big thing, that this is the way that Putin is trying to project his power and influence around the world. And we need to be aware of that and react accordingly.
We mentioned France only because Emmanuel Macron, the president, is quoted as saying that he's working hard to reopen to vaccinated travelers. In other words, what I understand is France is not determined what the rules will be to take a vacation in France, and that's critical to Britain. I understand everybody in Britain likes to go to France the way everybody in America likes to go to the seashore. I understand that. But France has had a very bad patch here where it's locked down the country several times. You've reported, Joe, and we both talked about Paris being a ghost town. So I'm not quite sure what these restrictions they're looking to lift in May are going to look like. Is there any clarity in Britain? Or is there ability for people to book ahead and then find out later what the rules are?
No clarity. And, you know, this is, again, the big problem with the travel picture and the international travel picture. I mean, we've spoken before about the UK restrictions on Britons going abroad for holiday, which is still technically illegal until May. But there's also this problem of where you would go to. And I know that, you know, speaking to you as a resident of the UK who's trying to think about what I might do for my summer vacation, it's really difficult. I have a whole bunch of places that I would like to be able to visit, and I have had the vaccine at this point, and yet you don't know what the rules are going to be. And so I think that what is probably happening is that a certain number of people are just kind of making some bookings and hoping for the best, and they'll have to get the refund if it doesn't work out. But of course, that will also be difficult for the travel industry, who really wants to be able to get people back in the air, back in the hotels, back on the beaches or in the museums again. So, you know, there needs to be some clarity on what the rules are going to be to allow that to happen.
As of right now, according to the London Telegraph, there are no hard rules for visiting France in these next months. So we turn to a story that's even more complicated. Enough of France. Let's go to Germany. Germany has a name to learn. Annalena Baerbock. She is nominated by the Green Party to be chancellor if the Green Party controls a majority in post-election. It's always a united majority of several parties. Tell me about the Green Party. Does it get respect in Europe, Joe?
Well, I think that the German Green Party is really one of the most interesting political stories in Europe that listeners should be paying attention to right now. I find it absolutely fascinating. They started out as a bunch of tree-hugging environmentalist scolds and anti-nuclear crazies and, you know, anti-NATO, anti-Western campaigners back in the 60s and 70s. And yet, within the past 5 to 10 years, they have really transformed themselves into a respectable center-left opposition party. I mean, it kind of started in the late 90s when they formed their first coalition as a junior partner to the center-left Social Democratic Party under Gerhard Schröder, and he was the chancellor. But now the Greens are really coming into their own, and I suspect that this is going to be a very successful election for them when Germans go to the polls nationally in September. And it's going to be because they have positioned themselves as a responsible party that takes responsible positions on a lot of things that is very much within the mainstream in Germany. I mean, their kind of environmentalism is now mainstream, but, you know, they are a fervently Russia skeptic party. They do not support the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline that Russia and Germany want to build together. They support human rights in China, so they're skeptical of some of Angela Merkel's investment treaties with Beijing. And I think that is kind of the opposition game that they're running here, and it seems to be working for them, if you believe the opinion polls right now.
I spoke with a member of the Hoover Institution, Russell Berman, who teaches at Stanford. He had a new column in which he helped me, because I do not have the German. He helped me identify that there are strong voices in Germany now speaking avowedly not only against Angela Merkel, who's in trouble with the electorate since the virus vaccine stumble, but also speaking against the whole apparatus of the Berlin government. And by that, they mean the government in general. A man by the name of Wolfgang Reitzle is a premier business executive, according to this report. In addition to the editorial leadership of Die Welt, which is a national newspaper, speaking against the apparatus of the state, the bureaucracy, the ideology, the incompetence, the what they can characterize as a toxic mixture of people who won't take risks. I'm puzzling, Joe, that this might be Green's moment just because they're not identified with government in the past.
Yes, I think that there would be a lot to that. I mean, the kind of phenomenon that you're talking about is something that's getting a lot of attention, especially in the context of their failed vaccination program, because there is a sense that one of the reasons it has gone poorly in Germany specifically is that the rollout has been so bureaucratized. There are so many rules and so many forms that you have to follow, and you have to get everything done exactly the right way and in triplicate before you're eligible to get your shot. And there's a lot of frustration with that slowing things down. And, you know, the Greens are really presenting themselves in contrast as this real breath of fresh air, this outsider party that is prepared to think in a new way that isn't sullied by having been in the government for many years, the way the Angela Merkel's ruling Christian Democrats or the Social Democratic Party on the left have all been in government and an unwieldy grand coalition for a long time. Now, I think that if voters are frustrated with the way the country is run right now, the Greens are going to look like a very enticing alternative because they have set themselves up as a much more mainstream party, and yet they aren't sullied by having been in the government.
Good news here at the close. I read from Wellington, New Zealand. As the passengers walked a little dazed through the airport gates, they were embraced one after another by family members who rushed forward and dissolved into tears. Elation and relief marked the opening of a long-anticipated travel bubble between Australia and New Zealand at the Wellington Airport. Now, that doesn't mean Australia and New Zealand are open to us, Joe. Okay, so don't book. Okay, they're still cautious about us from the North Temperate Zone. But they are now open to each other. And I'm puzzling whether, in general, the European Union is preparing people for the fact that we are going to force the reopen if they don't hurry up. Do they talk about that in London? That we're no longer just impatient. We're going to be like that publican at the bath. We're going to crash the gates if they don't open.
Well, I just think that there is a huge amount of frustration in a lot of corners with the current restrictions and with the fact that no one in any government really seems to be able to give an entirely clear or convincing explanation for when these restrictions will end. And that creates a very unpredictable situation. I think who knows, which governments are going to be the first out of the box with some sort of really creative solution here? What kind of demonstration effect is that going to create? It seems like we have been stuck for so many months now. Part of me wants to hope that we're getting to a point where these frustrations are going to sort of bubble up in rather unpredictable ways, potentially leading to some changes and some innovation here.
Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes the political economics column. He's based in London. We're going to turn to A Walk in the Park with Joe, because that's what, ever since the beginning of the lockdowns in the spring of 2020, that's what I want to hear. That's important. Not rules, not guidelines, not obedience, but our people out in the parks. However, there's a bigger story, and it has to do with the football, what they call football, what we call soccer, and hundreds and hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. And it's controversial. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show.